Okay, good morning. We'll get started. Apologies for the cancellation last week, but we'll pick up from where we left off. So, last time we had started with the idea of we've examined cells as a way of providing full coverage or radio access over sort of a large area. And so then the next question is, how do you turn, well, just sort of an access point into a telephony link, and, you know, later on also connectivity to the wider internet. Okay. And so, again, we've seen how we get the basic access, but now we have to look at how that access can be managed. And so there's a lot of issues that sort of aren't there for, again, a wired network. We have to find the users, find the mobile units. So they're somewhere here. In a wired network, well, they'd be at the end of the wire, and here they can be in any of the cells. We have to identify the users somehow and make sure that they're legitimate and have a right to be using the network. When we found them and, you know, sort of authenticated them, we have to manage their mobility. So how do we deal with them moving from cell to cell to cell? And then sort of, that's almost just sort of providing the endpoint. And then, of course, you want to do all this so that you can provide connectivity for the user so that they can reach another mobile, another telephone, later on again, the internet. Okay. And so what we're looking at now is sort of an overview of how sort of cellular networks do this. And we've started with the GSM architecture, and this is the most prevalent 2G system. So systems that provide, again, digital voice connectivity, and also some quite limited data services. Okay. And they're very much on the telephony model and are connection oriented. If you're, if you want this sort of connectivity to the outside, you're going to get an end-to-end connection, not just sort of packet handling. Okay. And so within that, we took a look at the basic architecture for providing this connectivity, and we said that there are three main components of the system. The OMC is operational. It sort of handles sort of long-term management of networks, billing, stuff like that, and yeah, we didn't go into a huge amount of detail. But we did look at the base station subsystem, and that is, again, how your mobile unit gets a radio link into a base, to a base station, and sort of it'll manage all the aspects of that radio link. Okay. And then the switching subsystem handled the connectivity issue. So you get the base station subsystem gives you this link, and then the switching subsystem turns that into an end-to-end connection. Okay. And we saw that particularly the switching subsystem had a number of functions sort of additional to just finding a connection. most of these had to do, again, with the idea of authenticating users and providing security for users. Okay, so after looking at sort of the overall architecture, we then dropped down to pretty much the sort of bottom layer, so the physical layer, and started looking at the channel structure for GSM. Okay, and now channels are sort of the conduit for signaling within the system, and signaling is what is used to set up the connectivity. And then sort of separate from signaling, you have the actual transmission of user information, your encoded voice signal. Okay. And so abstractly, channels were divided into logical and physical, where you could think of the logical channels as being what the information was that was being sent, and the physical is how it's sent. So how it's sent is sort of at the lowest level a combination of the time slots plus frequency allocations, and then we saw that for various reasons having to do with how the logical channels were structured, we combined those time slots into frames, multi-frames, super frames, it's hyper frames. And so that gives you just, you know, literally physical slots sort of in time. Okay. The logical channels then map certain control and data transmissions onto those physical slots. Okay. And we said there were pretty much three types of logical channels. There were traffic channels, and those were used to transmit the user data, and then control and broadcast channels, which were used for control purposes. Control channels were used to provide and manage individual connectivity, and broadcast channels were used to manage the sort of physical aspects of the cells, so power control, synchronization, issues like that. Okay. And so again, those logical channels mapped onto physical channels in what ended up being a semi-complex way. Okay. And so we saw at sort of again the very bottom, you had time slots, and these were called bursts, and depending on sort of again, what you wanted to do, the bursts had different structures, and the bits were transmitted in different ways. Those were mapped onto 8 time slot frames, and again, the frames were mapped into multi-frames, and you had sort of one multi-frame for the sort of the traffic and control, and one multi-frame for then the broadcast structure. Okay, and unfortunately the frames were of different length. The one multi-frame is 26 frames long, the other is 56. So then in order to arrive at an entire cycle, those multi-frames were combined together into a super frame. So you just had the 26 by 51 times 51 frame super frames. And when you got through one of those super frames, you were all the way through your signaling cycle. And then, as we said, those super frames got combined into hyper frames, which were sort of very large, very sort of long time frames, and were used for purposes of encryption. Okay, so now what we're going to take up with is we're going to sort of wrap up with the sort of physical end of things, looking at various other issues to do with the transmission system. So if we can recall our digital comms model, and for the digital comms model we had different blocks, voice coding, channel coding, etc. Since this is sort of, again, a radio transmission system, all of those issues have to be addressed within GSM, and so we're going to note the sort of techniques that GSM uses to transmit them. And that pretty much gives you your physical layer, your physical transmission characteristics, moving up a little bit into the data link layer. And we will then move beyond to look at the layer 3, the GSM layer 3, which is, again, the connectivity management for cellular, for GSM systems. And you don't get confused with the layer 3 network layer for OSI. There are some aspects the same, but remember, here we're dealing with providing end-to-end connections, end-to-end voice channels. Okay, and so layer 3 is managing those voice channels, and it is different than sort of it's forwarding packets on end-to-end. So it can look a little weird if you start thinking layer 3 as being the network layer, as you've seen in sort of all your basic your basic telecoms modules. Okay, so again, what we're doing now, we've looked at this channel structure, and that essentially gives you how the radio channels that are used to transmit information from mobile station to base station. And so we're just going to have a quick look at the rest of the blocks. So the voice coding, your channel coding, and your modulation. Okay. And so, again, obviously these have to occur in both the mobile equipment and the at the base station. And so what occurs at one end more or less occurs at the other, with the exception, obviously, that you are at the mobile equipment end having to do that last step of either converting an analog speech signal into a digital signal, if you're sort of receiving the transmission, you have to translate the digital signal that's received back into an analog signal to be sent out to a speaker. Okay, so the mobile equipment has that last analog to digital step. Once you're within the network, it's all digitized. so you don't have to worry about the analog end of things. Okay, so how does GSM handle speech coding? And if you recall from the first lecture, the traditional method of encoding speech is pulse code modulation, which gives you a 64 kilobit per second stream, and GSM does not have the bandwidth to handle this. So GSM uses a model-based encoder to transmit the voice signal, and the bottom line of that is that you can get down to a rate of 13 kilobits per second easily, and sometimes in some cases you'll get to half that. Okay, and so again, the model-based encoders provide parameterized models of the voice signal and then transmit not samples but the parameters involved. Okay. And so a few additional tricks are used to try and sort of improve the quality and the bandwidth and the data rates. GSM uses discontinuous transmission mode, which means that you only transmit sort of when there is something to transmit, and you can use the signal, you can use the channels for other purposes in between. And also, a bit of background noise is introduced just to, again, make the signal sound better. Okay. So you have this 13 kilobit per second signal that then has to be encoded, that gives you a bit stream, and then that bit stream has to be encoded to try to handle errors within the system. So that's, again, the idea of channel coding. And so a three-tier error handling scheme is used, and the bits of the signal are categorized then as being very important, important, and not so important, and the very important bits are considered to be crucial to the decoding of the signal. So if you don't receive those bits, you can't decode the signal. Okay. The important bits are just that. They're important to be received, but it is possible to recover from the loss of some of these important bits. And then the not-so-important bits, again, are just considered, you know, the signal quality will improve if you have those not-so-important bits, but you can still decode the signal if you don't get them. Okay. So now for the very important bits, a block decode that are sent through a block coder, so they're they essentially have a parity check put on them, and then the coded important bit, very important bits, plus the important bits are included into a convolution coder, and then the whole stream is transmitted. Okay. Now, the idea of the block coder is that you can detect errors, but you can't correct them. So again, if when you're decoding, you detect that those bits are incorrect, you have to drop your data. There's no recovery from that. The convolution coder allows for recovery of data. Okay. Now, as I think we mentioned earlier, maybe not, but once that those encoded bits are further encoded through interleaving, so they're rearranged so that not all of the bits are being transmitted on the same channel at the all the time. Okay. So, as we, it should be obvious, channel coding is going to, well, it's going to increase the number of bits used to represent your data stream, so it's going to, you're going to have to send at a higher bit rate. And then each of the components sort of has a different functionality. Okay, so the block coding adds 3 parity bits to each 50-bit block, and this solely allows us to detect errors. If an error is detected, then there's no way to correct it. Again, this is something, you know, that's you would have seen when you looked at basic parity checks. They're very difficult to, they're not possible really to correct errors using parity checks. And so if an error is detected, then the whole block is dropped. Okay. Now, if you drop a block of data, well, you still have to sort of keep your voice transmission going, and so interpolation is used between sort of the next block sent and the previous block to sort of keep the data flow. Okay. So the 53 bits coded, so that's the very important bits, plus their parity check, plus 132 extra bits is then sent into a convolution coder. And so this gives us an output of 378 bits. So you've more than doubled the number of bits that are being transmitted now. And so, and then those are interleaved, as we'll see in a minute. So at this stage, at the convolution coding stage, convolution coders do allow for some error recovery. Okay. So you do your convolution. At the other end, you deconvolve. You then check, again, the very important bits, whether they were correct. As long as the very important bits were correct, then you use the information that you transmitted. Okay, so we now have these 378 bits to transmit. And as a further error resistance technique, those bits are interleaved. Okay. So, now, we have the, so that lots, it's the, it's, okay, it's actually 456 bits. We're interleaving now. We had the 378. We're interleaving those now with these 78 unimportant bits. And so we divide this block of 456 bits, which we want to transmit, into 8 sub-blocks of 57 bits each. And essentially, we just sequentially arrange the bits within the sub-blocks. And that means that any given block is transmitting every 8th bit. And so the blocks then, these blocks will then have 57 bits in them, and so that is transmitted, again, if you remember the burst structure, we had the two 57-bit slots to transmit data in, and so two of these sub-blocks can be transmitted per burst. And we made sure that within any given frame, the two sub-blocks that are being transmitted are associated with two different speech transmissions. And so what this means is that within any given time slot, within any given frame, you are only transmitting one of one of these sub-blocks of the burst. So if a time slot gets lost or the burst gets corrupted, then you lose one of those sub-blocks, not the whole initial data block. Okay. So again, the hope would be that if you lose an 1/8 of your signal, that using the convolution coding, you can still recover your signal in the end. Okay. So that's speech coding, channel coding. The next step is to modulate your signal, so to translate your, the bit sequence that you're transmitting into using the carrier frequencies that can be transmitted then and interpreted. And GSM uses Gaussian minimum shift keying. And so the idea here is to compromise between spectral efficiency, the complexity of the transmitter, and I'm just going to show you a picture, but it also sort of limits the impact on the frequencies outside of the bandwidth. Okay. And so just to see that, you can see that GMSK doesn't have the sort of sidebars that other sort of more standard frequency shift keying techniques do. So it restricts the signal fairly tightly to the bandwidth allocated. And again, that means that you have less interference with signals, competing signals. Okay. And just to wrap up on the physical radio link aspects, sort of additional techniques are used to try and sort of improve the signaling. Frequency hopping is used at a slow rate. Okay, so you have hopping on a frame-by-frame basis, so frames are transmitted again, the frequency at which the frame is transmitted changes with time. Okay, and that the sort of has all the benefits that we've discussed for the spread spectrum. And additionally, the receiver will attempt to use what information it has to correct for multipath effects. Okay, so again, there's an attempt to optimize for this mobile environment. Okay, so that's a semi-detailed look at signaling for GSM. And so now we're going to sort of jump sort of up a little bit. That the radio link aspects again give you sort of how you transmit, you actually physically transmit your signals, so the physical layer, and provide the support for sending signaling to manage higher layers. So how do you sort of manage the like error correction? Well, you need channels to send the signaling messages, okay? How do you arrange your connections? Well, you use the channels to send the appropriate signaling messages. How do you sort of, again, manage the mobility of the user? You use channels to send the signaling messages. Okay. So we're going to now take sort of layers one and two, so physical and sort of link layer as a given. So you've got a basic radio channel which you can rely on to send enough of the bits reliably to be getting on with. Okay, and again, it's probably a bit dodgy to be talking about the OSI stack in the sense that we are dealing with a connection-oriented system providing a voice channel, not packet transmission. But the ideas are, at the low levels layers, the ideas are pretty much the same. You need to get a bit stream from point A to point B. Okay. So, sitting on top of that for GSM is the GSM layer 3, and this is going to manage the connectivity for GSM. Okay, and it's going to do all these tasks that we've said are important. It's going to manage the channel allocation. So how do you decide what link a user gets? Well, you have to have some policy for deciding that. So for allocating the link resources, so that's the radio resource management. You have to manage the mobility of the user, so you have to keep track of where the user is, and again, at some point that might mean going back and allocating a different set of resources to the user as they move from one cell to another, from one MSC to another, from one region to another. And you have to provide the connectivity to the user. So when they want to make a phone call, you have to provide all the telephony functions that are associated with making a phone call. So provide the set up that end-to-end connection. Okay, so not just a radio link, but an end-to-end connection. Okay, so it's clearly a bit more complicated than in a basic telephony system, telephony is complicated enough usually for reasons of just size and volume, but with mobile systems, you have different types of links that have to be traversed to make this end-to-end connection, And obviously, managing a radio link is different from managing a wired link. And yet we're setting up from a radio link from the mobile station to the base transceiver, and then wired links from the base transceiver onwards. Okay. The mobility of the user, again, it introduces a lot of issues. So you have the authentication process. How do you decide? Well, first of all, that your user sort of has a right to be there. And then as they move, how do you sort of transfer all that information about the user? And how do you physically keep track of where the user is? Okay. And that obviously has sort of a big impact on the radio links and also the mobility management. Okay. And finally, in terms of connectivity, well, again, you have to set up this end-to-end connection. And for a voice, that's straightforward enough. But we also provide, again, some limited data services, so the connection layer has to handle that as well. So our signaling protocols divide up into these three layers: the physical layer, just again managing a physical link, the data link layer, getting sort of arranging that the bit stream arrives sort of as intact as possible, and then the GSM layer three, which will connect the mobile station not just to the base transceiver, the base station, but also back to the MSC, which can, again, then further connect to the broader network, the wired network. Okay, so this is arranged in a layered architecture, and depending where you are, the protocols at each of the layers are going to be slightly different, and which protocols are active at any given layer are different. Okay. So if we look at our diagram, the end-to-end connection is, as we said, between the mobile station and the MSC. And so at the end points, all of the layers of the protocol stack are active. And then in the intermediate steps, so you have the mobile station signaling to the base station, which then signals to the base station controller, which then signals to the MSC. At that intermediate step, we only go up to the radio resource control layer. Okay. And so again, what that's saying is that decisions about connection and mobility management are really, they're handled by the MSC. Now, between each of the different components, we have a different interface defined, and obviously what's that? That's defining the protocols that are in play and the message transport for those protocols. And we see in particular that sort of if we look at the radio resource management, that is active between the mobile station and the based transceiver, and that just it gets encoded for sort of signaling purposes as you go farther on. Okay. Okay, so just to look at then what each of these components does, the radio resource management controls essentially the allocation of channels within a cell. Okay. So the mobile station needs a channel to connect to the base station, and the radio resource management will control that connection. Okay. So what are the issues involved? Again, the decisions will be made by the MSC, and you have the required decisions are channel assignment, which again, can change and be released as the user, well, either ceases to need them or moves to a different area. Handover, so again, as the user changes, different channels have to be allocated. And then the sort of optimization of sort of the global channels in terms of providing frequency hopping. So you need to provide different codes to the different user connections so that they can be decoded. And power control to, again, optimize the reception of the signals is handled. The discontinuous transmission and reception is handled here. So again, the resources are only allocated as they're needed, not sort of continually, and timing. So the issues about allocating these very specific radio resources are dealt with at the radio resource management layer. Okay. Again, from the point of view of the end user, what this is getting them is their radio channel. Okay, so that they can send their data as needed. Okay. So, one of the most crucial and complicated parts of that all is the handling of handover. And so we want to, again, maintain our connectivity as we're moving from area to area to area. So that means moving from cell to cell to cell. And eventually, if you move far enough, you're moving from the control of one base station controller to another. Move farther again, you're moving from the control of one MSC to another. Okay. Now, at the radio resource level, we're primarily, we're looking at how the channels are allocated for this handover. And so the reasons can have to do with mobility and also have to do with that have to do with the mobility for now. Okay, so it's a signaling intensive job to manage this. You have to sort of constantly keep track of where the user is and sort of whether they'd be better off to be moved into a different region of control at any given point. And it has to be done quickly, okay? So you want to do it seamlessly so the user doesn't notice that it's happening. Okay. Now, GSM uses signal measurements on both uplink and downlink to sort of make the decision as to when to do handover. Okay. So there's four types of handover, and again, they are categorized in terms of which components of the system are involved. Okay. And so, obviously, which components of the system are involved also comes into impacts on the negotiations to perform that handover. So the negotiations to perform the handover have to involve all the systems involved. Okay. Sort of at the lowest level, you can have intra-cell handover, so handover within a cell. And the idea here is if you've, for instance, sectorized the cell, or in some way sort of done more than your basic one transceiver per cell allocation, then you can change around again where the user is connected. Okay. And that's contained within the cell. You can hand over between different base stations. And here we would assume that the base stations were controlled by the same base station controller. So all we're changing is the BTS, the base transceiver. And in that case, the handover can be handled by the base station controller. The decision can be made there. In some cases, you will hand over between two base station controllers, and that will be handled by the MSC that controls those two base station controllers. And finally, at some, you might have to hand over between two MSCs. Okay. And in that case, the two MSCs have to negotiate that handover. Okay. So just to summarize that, again, we're considering what parts of the system are involved in the different types of handover. So in one case, in the first case, you just have the BTS involved, and those decisions can be made quite locally, and the BSC would typically sort of have the intelligence to make that, but it's within the same cell. In the second case, you're going from one cell to another, so one base station to another, and again, if it's under the control of the same BSC, the BSC can handle it. And in the third case, you're talking about going from one BSC to another, but under the control of the same MSC. And so in that case, the MSC can handle that handover. And finally, in the fourth case, you're talking about going from one MSC to another MSC. And in that case, the two MSCs have to negotiate the handover. Okay, so in addition to handover precipitating sort of new channels, we also have to track where the user is within the system. Okay. And the mobility management layer tracks where the user is within the system and deals with just maintaining the information about the user, so their location and also their authentication information, and sort of making sure that that's updated in the appropriate places as the user goes along. For instance, as a user changes from one MSC to another, how does the next MSC know about the authentication information? Okay, and so location management is needed when the user first connects to the network and has to be then updated as the user moves through the network and ended when the user removes themselves from the network. Okay. And the information available here allows the network to locate the user as necessary. Okay, and the primary purpose of that was for paging. So if somebody wants to call the user, then the network will maintain enough information about the user to get within a paging area. And then, again, the signal will go out within that area to try and find the exact location of the user. Okay. Additionally, all of the user's authentication information has to be managed. And so the user location information is stored both in the home location register and also in the visitor location register. So as the user goes from one MSC to another, the MSC that the user is currently connected to keeps track of the relevant user data, not everything, but what it needs to sort of locate and deal with the user. Okay, so authentication and security are handled at the mobility management layer, and so security is an issue just because it's a radio link. Anybody can listen to a radio link. And so, sort of generically, there are techniques that can be used to handle security. These include the use of source coding, so just sort of encrypting your signal, also doing frequency hopping, which again we said, unless you know sort of the PN sequence to decrypt to de-hop the signal, you're not as likely to recover the signal. Okay. So in GSM, encryption is used, authentication is used, and the users are also anonymized by the use of temporary IDs within the network. Okay. And so a number of algorithms exist to manage the various security details. We have encryption, and so you have algorithms for the encryption and for the generation of the encryption keys. Okay. And so, additionally, obviously, you've got sort of lower level security, such as password protection for your SIM card. Okay. So, the SIM card and the authentication unit have to sort of coordinate for to perform the encryption and sort of store the appropriate encryption data. And then, as I said before, within the network, users are not identified sort of by their SIM, but by a temporary identification, just to, again, try and sort of limit the ability to identify a given user. And finally, the equipment itself can be checked to make sure that, again, it hasn't been stolen, etc. Okay. So, the final layer of GSM Layer 3 is communication management, and here we're almost up to sort of just something fairly straightforward, making the sort of end-to-end connection. At communication management, you deal with the establishment of calls. Okay, so you establish a connection, this connection has to be established sort of for both a sending mobile and or a receiving mobile. And potentially as the as the user moves, the connection has to be sort of reestablished. Okay. Additionally, the supplementary services are handled at this layer as well. So your SMS services, again, usually by providing short duration connections. Okay, and those connection management functions are all handled by the MSC. So again, if we went back to our stack, we see that, again, the mobility management and the connection management are sort of high-level issues that are dealt with at the MSC. Okay, so that's pretty much what we're going to say about GSM. And so I leave you with a bunch of URLs. And these are not examinable exactly, but they are interesting. They give you the whole flow of control for call establishment, handover, etc. So they will take, if you look at them, you'll see how control flows through the various layers of the protocol stacks and through the various components of the GSM network. Okay, so let's take a short break here. I'm going to say a few words about network simulation, and then at 12 o'clock, someone is going to give a presentation about NS specifically, so an introduction into NS, which sort of might make it a little clearer sort of what you're doing on your assignment. So we'll take a short break here and return in about, say, 10 minutes.